From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today On Deadline is giving you an update from the Middle East as Israel continues its war against Hamas 1 year after its October 7th attack on Israel that sparked a conflict and a crisis in the region. Here's the latest. Last week, Israel announced that it had killed Yahya Sinwar. He was the leader of Hamas, which has been identified as a terrorist group. Sinwar was killed in a drone strike on Gaza. This blow to Hamas came more than a year after the terrorist group launched its surprise attack on Israel. That attack killed more than 1,200 men, women, and children. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that Sinwar was the architect of the attack. So here's the obvious question. With Sinwar gone, is the war over? The short answer to that is no. In fact, a senior member of Hamas told NBC News this week that they believe Sinwar's death will only make the group stronger. The United States' assessment is that while Hamas is much weaker following Sinwar's death, the group could still be lethal, and it certainly has the capacity to cause more violence. For example, White House National Security Communications Advisor Jack Kirby noted that Hamas is still holding hostages. CBS News foreign correspondent Margaret Brennan, also moderator of Face the Nation, shared more on what Sinwar's death could mean for the war and the region as a whole in the hours after it was announced.
We just getting word out of Beirut this morning from the AP that a top Hamas political official has finally confirmed the death, what we already knew, the death of Yahya Sinwar. Why did it take so long when we had this DNA confirmation from Israel yesterday? And who are you looking to, or what type of person are you looking to maybe take his place?
Well, I'm sure Hamas itself is reeling. Yahya Sinwar was not just the recently named political director, but he had long been the military commander on the ground inside of Gaza. In other words, the buck stopped with him. And he was the architect of the October 7th attack. He was incredibly influential and powerful. And so to take him off the battlefield is definitely a blow to Hamas. It's not clear who could really fill those shoes. There's speculation as to, you know, the names that could be considered here as Hamas tries to reconstitute its leadership. The four top leaders have been killed in recent months by Israel, but we will have to see what happens next. This is a huge moment for Israel. They killed the equivalent in their world of Osama bin Laden. That's the kind of moment this is for their society, for their military, even though the military just stumbled upon him and basically got lucky here. But they do need to assess whether to use this moment in a different way. Israel's killed Hamas leaders before. What's different this time? And by the way, U.S. intelligence warns the devastation from this war, the destruction, the civilian death, upwards of 42,000 people, majority women and children killed in Gaza, will have a generational impact on terrorism. That is what the director of U.S. intelligence said. It is a warning about what could happen next.
Do you expect the next leader will be based in Gaza or will be in exile?
For Hamas, they have recently split that. The political leader in Doha, Qatar, being able to meet with diplomats while the commander, Yahya Sinwar, was actually in Gaza. He wasn't dining in capitals. He was a hardened fighter, as you saw in that video that the IDF claims shows his death. Will his brother, for example, Mohammed, become the military commander on the ground? It's possible, but is he the kind of strategist that Sinwar was? Unclear. We will likely see that leadership split. For the hostages, the more than 100 hostages still being held by Hamas, all of this is consequential, and their families hope that this will be seized, as many have said publicly, as an opportunity by the Israeli Prime Minister, by the U.S., to try to negotiate with whoever steps into that role to bring the hostages home. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken's headed to the region next week to try to do some of that.
IDF spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Nadav Shoshani shared more on the operation that resulted in Sinwar's death last week. Shoshani said that the IDF had been searching for Sinwar for a year, but stumbled upon him last Wednesday when three suspects were found in Rafah. After a firefight, Sinwar was left wounded and sought refuge in a nearby building. The IDF then used a drone and tank to demolish the building, killing Sinwar in the process. To give more perspective on the killing and what it means for Israel moving forward, reporter Linda Gradstein joined Odyssey.
Israel saying they've taken out the leader said to be the mastermind behind the October 7th attack. Big day, and could it perhaps even be a turning point in this now war that's lasted over a year?
Well, that's certainly possible. I mean, Yahya Sinwar was the head of the top of the list of who Israel wanted to assassinate. And actually, he was killed almost by accident. He had been believed to be hiding in a tunnel. He came up to the ground. It wasn't clear exactly why he did that, but they opened fire and killed him and from a building and killed him. Then the question is, what happens now? The families of the hostages are certainly hoping that it will lead to a deal that both Israel and Hamas will say that this war really isn't going anywhere and it will lead to a ceasefire deal and the release of the hostages.
There's a hearing from some of the family members of the hostages. It seems like there's kind of mixed emotions here. On one hand, maybe relief. Maybe some are seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. On the other, some are saying that, well, now that this leader is dead, their fate is in the hands of who knows who.
Right. That's the question, right? So there are still 101 Israeli hostages. Israel says they believe half of them are still alive, although the number may even be lower than that. And then the question is, does anyone even know where they all are? Some of them may have been being held by other groups, by Islamic Jihad. And will there be an announcement that, for example, Yahya Sinwar's brother, Mohammed, is now the leader of Hamas or not? And if so, will Hamas be able to negotiate? I mean, until now, there's been a deal on the table for a hostage release for months, and it's been stopped by both Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the leader of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar. So the question is there really going to be something new? Secretary of State Antony Blinken is expected to come to the region in the next few days and try to start push something forward. So there's a lot of uncertainty, but certainly among the families, there's also some hope.
It always seems, though, while this is a big moment, certainly for Israel, it's a big moment in this war, and we've seen time and time again that just because a leader or one of the leaders is killed, that does not mean that the group or the ideology goes away.
Right. That's true. At the same time, you know, Hamas has been hit very hard. Something it has, I think, 32 battalions in Gaza. And now, according to Israeli military sources, there's like, you know, 30 have been taken out and there's maybe two battalions left. But the fact is that the rocket fire from Gaza, I'm not talking about Lebanon now, which is a completely different situation, but the rocket fire from Gaza has almost stopped. Hamas as a military force has been more or less destroyed. The question is, Hamas is an ideology, and without any political solution, without some sort of, you know, plan for the day after in Gaza, and who's going to run Gaza, and, you know, who is that going to be? And Israel says it doesn't want it to be Hamas, but then who is it going to be? Is Israel going to allow the Palestinian Authority, which is based in the West Bank, perhaps with the help of other Arab countries, the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, to run Gaza? And so far, Israel's refused to even discuss that. So there's no military solution to this conflict. There's only a political solution. And so far, neither Israel nor Hamas has been really willing to discuss that.
Sinwar's death may be a major blow for Hamas. However, the battles with Hamas aren't the only ones that Israel is fighting. In Yemen, the Houthis continue to pop up, and that group fires missiles at ships in the Red Sea and Israel. In Lebanon, Israel has started a ground incursion to take out the group Hezbollah, which has also been firing at Israel throughout the last year. And to the east of Lebanon, Israel continues to face drone and missile strikes from Iran, leaving many afraid that a broader war could break out at any moment. How is Israel handling all these battles, and how long can it continue? David Ali, associate professor at the University of Michigan, joined Odyssey to explain.
It's been 3 weeks since Iran attacked Israel. How is the situation there before we get into some of these decisions made by the Pentagon? What's it like at this point?
Well, I think there are a number of factors that are affecting Israel's response. Prime Minister Netanyahu and other senior officials in Israel have vowed to retaliate for that attack, even though it seems like it was a long time ago now, but only 3 weeks ago. But if you think, Brad, about what happened in these subsequent 3 weeks, well, in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Yemen, Israel is fighting, is engaged in these military campaigns on multiple fronts, and there's also going to be a U.S. election in 2 weeks. And so I think all of these things are combining to influence the Israel's decision on when to retaliate, and if so, what will that strike look like, and how significant will it be? And so these are all the things I think are swirling around Israel's decision to retaliate, even though they haven't done it yet.
Well, the word dynamic comes to mind, certainly, especially with our presidential election coming up. Tell us a little bit more about this missile defense system that the Pentagon has ordered to be released for Israel. How important is it? And it's worked in the past, has it not?
I mean, the THAAD system has been around since the Cold War, I believe, since at least the 60s, if not even earlier. And this will just be one additional air defense capability that Israel already has, because they operate the Iron Dome system. There's a separate ballistic missile defense system called the Arrow system in the aftermath of October 7th last year. The U.S. has moved Patriot missile batteries into Israel. And then there is a large U.S. military presence in both the Red Sea and off the Mediterranean coast, which has a lot of defensive capability that could also turn offensive if needed. So there's a tremendous amount of capability in the region already. And this is just yet another piece. And it's more for the expectation that if whenever Israel does decide to retaliate, and then Iran and perhaps Hezbollah will counter retaliate, they will probably, we'll see another salvo of these ballistic missile and deep strike rockets that will be launched at Israel. These type of weapons capabilities are the things that will help bring them down if intercepted.
All right. And then you throw in the fact that there is now a deployment of U.S. troops. How might that influence the dynamics between Israel and its regional adversaries?
Not really. I mean, the number of troops that are coming to be part of the THAAD sort of piece of it is only about 100, but there's already 40,000 U.S. soldiers, sailors, airmen in the region to be part of that U.S. presence that I described a minute or so ago. So 100 on top of 40,000, if you think about it, isn't that much. It's just a question of, you know, what is their mission? What are their rules of engagement? When do they go from defense to offense and vice versa? And these are all part of that dynamic situation that you described before.
While war and tension swirls around Israel on what seems like all fronts, there's one ally whose reaction matters the most, at least to us. Of course, we're talking about our own reaction. Since the October 7th attack, the U.S. has kept up its support for Israel, sending money and arms and military equipment, even as the body count of civilians continues to rise. But last week, the U.S. appeared to draw a line, demanding that Israel do more to protect civilians in Gaza. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin sent a joint letter to Israeli defense officials demanding Israel act to improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza within the next 30 days or risk violating U.S. laws governing foreign military assistance. Among the demands were calls for Israel to allow at least 350 trucks a day to enter Gaza through its four major crossings, to increase security for humanitarian convoys, and to implement humanitarian pauses across Gaza to allow for activities like vaccinations, aid distribution, and more. experts say Israel's response to the demands will be telling in terms of how much support the U.S. continues to provide in its battles against Hamas and more. Israel hadn't responded directly, at least not yet, to the October 13th letter from Blinken and Austin as of the time of this recording. However, CNN reported that one day after the letter was sent, the Israeli agency that manages policy for the Palestinian territories and the flow of aid into the Strip did post social media photos of aid going into Gaza. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.